Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast with me, your host, Danny Kennedy, and you're listening to episode number 6. On today's episode, I'm going to need you to bear with me, guys, as the audio quality is not great, although the content is well worth the listen, as I sit down and have a chat with Director of Athlete Performance at WSSC, Christian Woodford. So we're going to start the podcast off with Christian telling you a little bit about himself, and then we'll get into the questions. Hope you guys enjoy the episode.
Obviously, as Danny introduced me, I'm Christian Woodford. I am the owner and director of Woodford Sports Science Consulting. We actually we design and implement high performance training for athletes of all levels, all ages, and all sports. I was very lucky to start in this industry 10 years ago. Before that, I actually did complete an undergrad in exercise science. I was lucky enough to be allowed into complete an honors project in neuroscience. And then obviously through that, obviously anyone who works in the industry has to complete a Cert 3 and 4 to be eligible to actually become a personal trainer. So my background actually started just like anyone else's. I started as a personal trainer in just a general commercial gym. That's where I kind of started applying my my craft, if you will, just for general population clients. And then I did heaps and heaps of free work experience at Oakley Chargers, Football Federation Victoria, Melbourne Victory Youth, Victorian Institute of Sport, where I was an intern. I was actually lucky enough to intern out at an NCAA Div 1 college at Maryland University in their football department. So I went to the States. That's all they did in the States. And I interned on some really good performance coaches there. Then I came back and I had the idea to start a performance-based company, applied sports science company inside Australia, because I kind of felt there was a massive gap in the private sector with actually athlete development, injury prevention and rehab programs. So I actually wanted to expose Australian athletes to a higher level standard that's actually evidence-based practice. I came back and I started Woodford SSE with the goal of really increasing awareness around applied sports science and really pushing what we do and creating more jobs for these aspiring performance coaches to actually use their knowledge. Came back and kind of blew up. And if you'd ask me, did I think this would happen? Probably not. But if you know anything about me, I just give it an absolute crack. I'm passionate. I love what I do. So within 4 years, we've actually got 4 performance centers. We've got 30 plus staff. We've got 6 directors. We've got a food line. You name it, we've got it. So I'm very lucky to do what I do right now and keep developing Australian athletes and keep developing the name of applied sports science in Australia.
Yeah, sweet. And yeah, like I've obviously been lucky enough to do a bit of training with you over the past year.
Yeah.
And I've kind of, even in the past 12 months, I've been able to see like how much WSSC is still growing. It's going through the roof. So it's awesome to see. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I think the listeners will be interested in, is what's your take on strength and conditioning for athletes in season and also out of season? Like, what's your philosophy on how they should approach their strength training?
I think the biggest thing is where there's so much information out on the internet at the moment, like so much, and it can be right and it can be wrong. And a lot of athletes in general, they take everything as like they read it from a guy who's got like 200,000 fans on Instagram or 200,000 likes on Facebook, and they take it as gospel. Yet most of these guys have no background in applied sports science or S&C for athlete development. So the biggest thing is, if you're going to get information from guys who actually do a job in athletic preparation, be it elite sport or be it in the private sector. Anyone who really knows what applied sports science is critical in season. Look, I'll tell you this, all year round strength training is critical. I don't care what sport you play. I don't care what level you're at. Strength training is critical in, off and pre-season. Now, if you look at the off pre-season period, that's where there's no games. There's obviously still training, but that's where you can really build a base and really develop that strength, that power, that speed base that you can really increase, which is so important during the off and pre-season period. In season, a lot of people don't know this, so if you're listening here, this podcast and play a sport, it's actually critical to lift in season. The reason for that is I want you to think strength. If you look at, well, if you look at the power equation, just remember everything we do in the gym is just a, form of general sport-specific conditioning. There's nothing I can give you in the gym that's 100% sport-specific. So when anyone says sport-specific training, that's a load of shit. The only true way of sport-specific conditioning is the skill itself, where you get the specific muscle group, motor pattern, metabolic pathway development. That's specific training. Anything in the gym is just a supplementary way. So I want you to think, when we're in the gym, we develop strength to maximize power and speed, because they're the two most important adaptations, because the athlete who can produce higher power outputs or has high, is quicker in terms of his velocity, his speed, will normally be a better athlete. So if you look at the power equation, for example, power equals force times velocity. Force is one part of the equation you have to develop. When I say force, that's strength. So I want you to think, if you stop strength training, if you are not trained for strength, force, you are losing it. So a lot of people think they come in the season, oh, I'll drop my strength training off, I don't need it anymore. That's where they start getting issues, because once you drop your strength off, your power and speed also decrease concurrently. What I mean by that is, in layman's terms, you get slower, you can't jump as high, you feel weaker, and these are all the things you need as an athlete. So as much as important, you see a lot of amateur athletes in the off pre-season period, they lift and they do high volumes of lifting. They come in season, they drop it off, and by week five, week six, they're detrained. They've minimized that strength stimulus. They can't jump as high, they can't run as quick, they can't change his direction as effectively, and that's where they start getting injuries as well. So it's critical to listeners to understand a periodized program is the best. When I talk about periodization, it's just breaking down training into blocks. And my advice is, get a qualified, someone who understands periodization, someone who's an actual performance coach, to program for you in the off-season, pre-season, in-season. That's why I push evidence-based practice.
Yeah, awesome. And I guess a lot of my listeners, as you'd probably imagine, are into the hypertrophy side of things, as well as athletes.
Yeah.
And I know the stuff that we've done in the past, the ways that you go about your hypertrophy work, but what is your opinion on programming for hypertrophy, and what do you think is kind of the sweet spot for in regards to sets and reps and whatever it may be?
Let me preface this by saying the most important thing for hypertrophy is nutrition. That and kind of if you look at body composition change in general, so fat loss, muscle gain, the most important thing for fat loss is nutrition. So calories in, calories out, and that's not even my area. So the first thing for me is, someone comes to me for fat loss, which very rarely happens. I'd say 99% of my clients are performance-based or rehab-based. But for everyone out there, if you want to drop body fat, you want to gain mass, the first thing you want to look at is your nutrition. So my advice is, go to someone who can write you up a nutritional plan, who can explain all the macronutrients that you need, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. That's the first thing you want to look at. If you look at hypertrophy training as a general rule, I have three factors to increasing your volume of your muscle. Now, for me, I look at hypertrophy for two reasons. One, to improve body armor, because most of my athletes are contact baseball athletes like football, rugby, gridiron. So you want some form of body armor. So hypertrophy is important for that. And number two, I improve it, and I like to improve the hypertrophy, the size of the muscle, to increase force generating capacity, because a bigger muscle has a potential to be a stronger muscle. So for me, I want to improve my athlete's functional hypertrophy so I can use it as force generating capacity. So I can use it for power, I can use it for speed. So that's the reason why I look to use and maximize hypertrophy. Now, when we look at hypertrophy, there's three factors to hypertrophy. Number one, it's mechanical tension. So we call it time under tension. So how long the muscle is under tension. Number two is metabolic stress. So when we talk about metabolic stress, we're looking at that. If you know anything about anaerobic glycolysis, which is just a metabolic byproduct, we're looking at lactate and hydrogen. So that's the first two, mechanical tension, metabolic stress. And the last one's muscle damage, so the amount of volume you get through. So if you look at your sets and reps, so they're the three factors that I always look at. I think Once again, I go back to nutrition, which is so huge. You can train all you want, but you don't eat, you don't grow. So if I was to look, I mean, there's no, this is people always talk about, I talk about a lot. There's no magic bullet when it comes to developing strength. So, like, you know, someone asks me, what is the best set rep scheme for strength, power, hypertrophy, strength, endurance? Let me say to your viewers, there's no perfect set rep scheme. The best set rep scheme is what works for you as an individual. A general guideline for me that I use with my guys would be anywhere from 3 to 5 sets, anywhere from 8 to 12 reps, and the rest periods could be anywhere from 90 seconds to 2 minutes. But I will say this, literature is looking these days is to allow longer rest periods. They've moved away from your minute to 2 minute rest periods and more towards longer rest periods, because once you drop your rest periods, you actually decrease performance of the set. What happens is you can't maintain that intensity. And intensity is a good indicator of hormonal response post-strength training. So your testosterone, your growth hormone, your insulin growth factor 1. So these days I've been giving my athletes a bit longer rest period so they can maintain that intensity of the weight lifted. They can maintain the intensity of the weight lifted. And that means they can get that hormonal response. So look, you do grow, and that's another thing, you do grow under lower reps. You still grow under 6 reps or less. But I mean, traditional hypertrophy loading has always been 3 to 5 sets, 8 to 12 reps, 90 seconds to 120 seconds rest period. But once again, it's just what works for you and your athlete. So there's general guidelines, Danny, that I'll give to your listeners.
Yeah, cool. And I guess on the other end of the scale, something that you and I both see a lot is females kind of leaning towards not doing strength training in the belief that they're going to get too big and bulky and whatnot. What's your opinion on strength training for females?
this one's an interesting one. The reason why this is being pushed and it keeps getting pushed in terms of in terms of, my old man just made me a coffee for everyone out there. Thanks, Jeff. strength training in females, right? Because you've got all like these Fitspo women and they do all this body weight stuff, which, hey, that's fine. If you like that and you do that, that's fine. But there, if you look at the 3 factors to metabolism, basal metabolic rate is the first one, BMR, which is directly related to how much lean body mass you have on your body. Thermogenic effect of food is number 2, and exercise is number 3. So if we look at all 3 of them again, the first one is number 1, the most important, so basal metabolic rate. Now, once you remember, basal metabolic rate is correlated with how much lean body mass you have on your body. When I'm talking about lean body mass, I'm talking about, for everyone out there, muscle tissue, right? The best way a female or anyone in general can improve their lean body mass is through, you guessed it, strength training. So the best way you can raise your metabolic rate overall for all the females listening is by resistance training, strength training. So the more muscle mass you have on your body, the higher metabolic rate, the more calories you're going to expend at rest, the less fat, more muscle you're going to have. And that's a good thing. That's what you want. Now, I think the biggest thing, Danny, for women is they have this, and this is anyone, this is every woman I've ever met. They've got this connotation that when they lift, they're going to look like these bulky male bodybuilders. And for everyone out there who's listening, those female bodybuilders, they are on steroids. They are on external, you could say, external supplements. They're raising their testosterone up. This is artificial. It's not, you know, it's not in their own bodies. They're going to lift a weight. They're going to be big and jacked up. That's because they take some form of steroid. I don't know exactly which one they specifically take, but it's some form of steroid, and that's why they get big and bulky like that. So for all the women out there, I want you to think everything within fat loss will come – it'll be working around as much lean body mass you have on your body. So the number one first of all, once again, for hypertrophy and nutrition will always be number 1 for any body composition change. Number 2 for your arsenal will be strength training. So focus on that, because muscle tissue is metabolically active, meaning you have to expend more calories to maintain it. And I've always said that you can go around and you can do all these body weight, you know, fancy squat jumps. You can do these split jumps. They're all fancy. They look good. at the end of the day, they are not putting on, they will not put on as much lean body mass as strength training. So focus on strength training and see your body composition completely change.
Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely, I think it definitely is improving, but there's still a way to go. But with more people like yourself starting to promote or promoting strength training for females, and the females now starting to see others doing it and seeing that they're not going to get big and bulky, it's definitely heading in the right direction. So I've got a couple more questions, a little bit of time left. So the next one I wanted to ask you is, we've discussed this a little bit, but can you quickly talk to us about what your thoughts are on excessive cardio for athletes in the off season? For example, Aussie rules football players starting pre-season, you know, November, even October, and just absolutely smashing the conditioning at early stages.
Yeah, I think this one's a good one because we're kind of stuck in the 1980s still with how we go about things. I'm talking about amateur-based clubs. So we're not talking about the 1980s. Back in the 1980s, they used to believe in, you know, static stretching, which within a whole program, static stretching is great. In my opinion, before any explosive dynamic movement or training or games, it's ineffective. It doesn't decrease chance injury. Most of the time, it probably increases chance injury because it slows down the neurological response. The big thing is a lot of footballers in general, they talk about getting kilometers in their legs. They do a lot of bodybuilding split part programming. They do heaps of cardio in the off preseason period. For all the footballers out there, for any sport in general, I want you to think if you're in a field based sport during the season, you'll be running majority of the season. So anywhere you can get off legs conditioning or you can do some form of GPP, general physical preparedness, some sort of just general conditioning work, which doesn't involve running, it's a good thing because you're going to do that during the season. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, but there are more effective ways of developing work capacity, aerobic capacity, than just doing cardio or long, slow distance running, which actually, for everyone out there, if you don't understand, it will actually decrease your strength, power, and speed. And that's something, you know, that's something you want to hold on to as a football player, as a rugby player, as a soccer player. You need speed, you need power, you need strength as well. So, I mean, my biggest thing is the shift on more effective means of developing work capacity during that period. At Woodford SSC, across our all four centres, every off pre-season period, we implement pretty much, we do a stock conditioning phase. And that can involve anything like implement-based training, which could be prowlers, it could be battle ropes, it could be med ball slams, it could be farmer's walks, it could be barbell complexes, anything where we're kind of just doing something different where it just doesn't really involve as much running and it's implement-based work. And they're still going to get some sort of conditioning effect, which is really good. As we get close to the season, that's when we can get more specific with our running-based work. If the athletes wanted to do some sort of running-based work in the off-preseason period, I'm a big believer in getting your conditioning for the skills. So if everyone's listening out there, I'm a big fan of Darren Burgess, who's at Port Adelaide, and he talks a lot about small-sided games. So what they do is they get in a normal-sized ground, and instead of playing 18-on-18, they might go 9-on-9. So they've actually halved the players. But the great thing about that is you're hitting two birds, one stone, because you're getting the skill adaptation, the technical tactical adaptation, and you're getting the conditioning adaptation in terms of muscle group, motor padding, metabolic pathway. So I'm really a big believer in small-sided games. You don't even have to play football. You could even play soccer, something different, but you're still getting the conditioning effect in the old preseason. And you've just shortened, you know, you've got less players, so the athletes have to work to a high intensity and they have to cover more ground. So that's something that you can implement, that kind of instead of just doing your traditional long, slow distance running. And also, just quickly before I finish on this question, I want you to think in a game of sport, when are athletes ever, well, when are footballers, when are rugby players, when are soccer players, when are any sport running for prolonged periods of time? It never happens. It's all stop start. So you need to train, you need to prepare your athletes better for the sport. So that's why I talk about interval training fartleks being a more effective way of developing work capacity, aerobic capacity, than just long, slow distance running or training like an endurance runner.
Awesome. I think a heap of people could take a lot of value from that. And Again, it's something that's slowly starting to improve, but yeah, it's good. So the last question I wanted to hit you with before we finish up is, we've actually done a blog on this before, but could you give us three tips for strength testing? So in preparation for strength testing to improve your one rep maxes, three of your top tips.
For 1RM testing,
yeah.
Okay, I think I've been through this with you before, but I'll go over it again. I think the biggest thing is I wouldn't want any athlete who's never done a 1RM before. You don't want to take someone who's a novice. When I say a novice, never trained before, and just kind of throw them in the squat rack, and then just get them to squat or deadlift straight away at 1RM. So they need to have some sort of the first tip I'd give. They've got to have some sort of background in strength training, because it is heavily neurally taxing. It taxes your joints as well. So if you don't have that background, I wouldn't do it. So make sure kind of the athlete knows the movement. Remember, strength training is a skill. It's a motor skill. So there's a skill of expression and strength. So the athlete has to learn the movement first. They've got to acclimatize the movement. So they've got to learn the movement first, number one. Number two, make sure you're giving enough rest periods. I see a lot of the time, and that's not to say that you have to give 20-minute rest periods between sets, but you should have stock rest periods, you know, and for maximal strength training where there's a heavy high neural, high muscular load, you want full, as much as possible, full neuromuscular recovery so you can maintain that intensity. It depends on your time constraints as well, Danny, but I would say anywhere between 3 to 5, 5 to 8 minutes, depending on your time constraints and how high level the athlete is. An athlete that is higher level, has higher neural recruitment, can recruit more motor units. When I say motor units, pretty much muscle fibers, so they can produce more of a force. You're going to have longer recovery. The last one is make sure when you do the test the first time, when you try and reproduce the test, you do it in the exact same conditions. Okay, it's got to be reliable. It's got to be valid. I've seen a lot of people, they change the conditions and how they do it. They change the rest periods. They change how they set up. They change the warm-up sets. You should do everything the same like you did the first time, the second time, the third time. The conditions have to be the same for the data to be reliable, because I think testing is important for strength diagnosis, for power, just for quantitative objective data, which is better than subjective data. Objective data is critical because it's factual. But at the same time, it has to be the same across the all boards, regardless if you're testing strength, power, speed, agility, aerobic capacity, repeat effort, whatever it is, it should be the same across the board. So they're my three big tips when you are testing 1RMs. And also the last one, just a quick one, is just be very careful. Don't make a joke of it, because you can get injured. We've tested over 1,000 athletes at my facilities across the board. We've never had one injury. So you shouldn't have issues with injury when you're testing. I mean, testing can always be safe. And don't ever listen to someone saying that 1RMs are dangerous. They're not dangerous. They're dangerous if you don't understand how to implement them properly.
Thanks, Ace, man. So we're probably going to have to wrap it up there. There's so much more that we could have talked about, and I know you've got plenty of stuff that you could share with us, but maybe we can do another episode in the future. Is there anything, any last things that you wanted to kind of mention or anything before we wrap it up?
Yeah, if anyone's got any questions with me, I'm sure people have a lot of how I started, because everyone wants to know. That's one question I get all the time, how I started Woodford SSC, how it grew to what it is today, how it grew so quickly. If you've got any questions about, especially my area, about rehab of the hamstring, the back or their ACL knee, or strength, power, speed development, you can hit me up at christian@woodfordssc.com, or you can go on the Woodford Facebook page, or you can go on the christianwoodford.com Facebook page and kind of see what we do there. We'll see how we train our athletes. A lot of videos for you guys to kind of as I said to Danny, that's the reason why I started this, is to really expose applied sports science, what high performance training is. So a lot of videos, a lot of write-ups on applied sports science. Have a read and just really upskill yourself on what athlete development is. To you, Dave, thanks for letting me come on the show, and I'd love to come back next few weeks. If anyone has any extra questions, Danny can ask me the questions. Once again, I'm always developing the industry and really pushing it forward. So thanks very much, Danny, and thanks to listeners for listening.
No worries, mate. Thanks for coming on the show. And yeah, we'll definitely get another episode in soon and cover some of the stuff we haven't been able to get on top of today.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks, mate.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.